we start the real thing, which is non-abelian gauge theories. And let me just give you a few words of presentation. You surely have already heard about non-abelian gauge theories, which are the building blocks, in fact, for constructing the interactions between all the particles and the fields we know in nature, because they are at the building blocks of both the standard model of electroweak interaction and of strong interaction, and they unify, in some sense, those kind of interaction. We don't have yet a unified theory consistent of all the interactions, but we know that they are the building blocks. And why does physicists have to construct the theory of strong interaction and electroweak interaction out of non-abelian gauge theories? Well, I'm not an expert in the history of high energy physics, but the problem is that in order to describe the interaction, you need vector particles. So vector particles, which are spin one particle. And I think you have already seen in the QFT1 course that vector particles if you try to quantize vector particles, you run into a very serious problem unless you have massless plus some sort of gauge invariance. So they must be massless and they must have a symmetry which enforce the fact that they are massless. And that's because, in general, if you try to quantize a massive vector particle, and this has been tried a lot, vector particles have a spin and they have longitudinal modes, the modes where the spin of the particle is the field is goes along the speed of the particle and not is not transverse, and these longitudinal modes are not unitary. The scalar product for the quantum mode associated to these longitudinal modes is negative. So you have problems with unitarity otherwise. So you have problems with unitarity or with Lorentz invariance, if you want, because you cannot have both Lorentz invariance and unitarity. So problems if the theory is not massless. Okay. Another reason is that one needs to have vector particles carrying charges. No, the photon is a perfectly nice vector particle, but it is not, it's chargeless. It cannot change the charge of the electron change an electron into a positron and carrying away the charge 2e, or minus 2e going in that one. But in fact, in the real world, charges, one needs to have particles which mediates interaction between charged particles where the charge are associated to non-abelian symmetries. Which goes beyond U1, not U1. And this can be done only if you construct vector particles, a theory of vector particles carrying charges associated to symmetries which are non-abelian symmetries. And in order to do that, you have to construct non-abelian gauge theories. And these non-abelian gauge theories, besides having interaction, if you want, between a particle and the vector boson, this is a vector, this is a particle. It turns out that in order to define those theory consistently at the quantum level, this theory will have interaction between the vector particles described by this kind of vertex of interaction. So you have interaction between the vertex, the vector bosons. You have interactions, which are, of course, not present in quantum electrodynamics. In quantum electrodynamics, the photon is neutral, so it cannot interact with itself. Two photons cross each other without seeing them, at least at the classical level, at the tree level. They can only interact if they create pairs of virtual electrons and positrons, and which mediates interaction between them. Okay. So now, so what are non-Abelian gauge theories? So let us start from a theory where I have matter fields. So I assume that I have a fermion field, the kind of field we have studied yesterday. But so I have a Dirac spinor, psi, so psi carries the spin indices, it is a 1/2 spin. But in addition, it carries charges. So psi is in fact a set of field psi I, where I are indices associated to the charges of a group G, which will be non-abelian in general. And you know that in general, when you have a field, there is a group of symmetry acting on the space of field. So those, you have a vector space representing by the component of these various fields. And the group act on these vector fields. So the I are, in fact, the indices of indices for representation R of the group G. Okay. So what does it mean? And it means that to any element G of the group, so now G is a standard, it's not a kind of anti-commuting variable that I've described yesterday, it's just an element of the group, transform this big multiplet, this is a multiplet of fields, into through a linear transformation into another multiplet where RG is just a matrix. So this is a matrix. This is a matrix acting on the, let us call it, dimension of the representation, vector space, generated by all the components. Okay? So you have a matrix. And so this means, of course, that psi I becomes I G times psi G. Okay? And of course, it's a representation, which means that R of G1 times G2 is equal to R of G1 times R of G2, where this is a multiplication in the group G, and this is the multiplication of matrices. You know what. And for instance, a simple example is to take G to be SU2, and to take as R the fundamental representation. That's a simple example, which will correspond, in fact, to the original proposal of Young and Mills, which were the first to propose that non-Abelian gauge theories could be theories of interaction. Well, they were not. They were mathematically right, but physically wrong, because they proposed to describe the strong interaction by an SU2 gauge symmetry, where the multiplet would have been the proton and the neutron. Which couldn't work, because in fact the proton and the neutron are not the fundamental fields. They are composite objects made out of quarks and gluons, etc. But this was a very good idea. So the fundamental representation means that simply psi contains two components, psi 1 and psi 2. And Rg in the fundamental representation is just equal to G, if you want, which is a 2 by 2 matrix of the group itself. But that's only true for the fundamental representation. Okay? And now, since we are dealing with, and in that case, so we are just multiplying, we are just changing by a symmetry transformation, we are just changing the vector psi into G times psi, where, in fact, G can be written always as exponential of, just want to be sure, there is an I factor times alpha A TA, where in fact TA will be the generators, well, T, let us set TA, where A will be the indices, of the Lie algebra of the group G. It's just the, and T, R, TA is the associated generator in the representation RG. So in general, and for instance, for SU2, for the SU2 fundamental representation, it shows that you can take as a TA simply the one half of the sigma A matrices, where A goes from 1 to 3 are the Pauli matrices. Okay? Now, up to now, and then, for instance, since it's a fermion, the conjugate of the field transforms as psi bar times G dagger in order to have something which is a, this is a matrix, so you can take the complex, the Hermitian conjugate of the matrix, and it acts on psi bar. Okay? So this is now up to now, I have a symmetry group acting on this multiplet of field, but for the moment it's a global symmetry. So in particular, if I take an infinitesimal transformation, the fields transform. So if I take G to be close to 1, so in this representation, this means that the alpha R, the generator, are small. The alpha A are small. They are infinitesimal generator. The transformation on the field psi becomes, you transform into psi plus I alpha A TA times psi, where this is a vector, this is a matrix associated to the representation R. So this is a dim R vector. This is a dim R times dim R matrix. Okay, and you have A going from, so here A goes, in general, A goes from 1 to another number, let us call it n, which is the dimension of the group. See, and in general, the dimension of the representation is larger than the dimension of the group. It's equal in the case of the fundamental representation, but in general, it is larger. And this is the infinitesimal transformation law acting on the fields. Yes?
So you wrote the word global symmetry.
Yes.
What is it a symmetry of the Lagrangian, right?
It will be a symmetry of the Lagrangian. Yes. So I assume, for the moment, I have a group of transformation, of course. This group of transformation is of no use if it's not a symmetry of the dynamics, so if it's not a symmetry of the Lagrangian. But for the moment, I don't write any Lagrangian. I'm just looking at how the fields transform. Right? So this is a group of transformation. Which for the moment is assumed to be a global symmetry of the Lagrangian. So it means that the alpha are constant. So the psi depends on x. The psi bar depends on x, but this is independent on x. Okay? So now the idea of gauge theory is to try to construct a theory where we can go from local from global gauge transformation to local gauge transformation to find the theory where the theory is invariant, so the Hamiltonian will be invariant, the action in the functional integral will be invariant, where alpha of x is now a local gauge transformation. And in general, we know already from the example of quantum electrodynamics that in the case of the U1 group, which is a particular case where you have just one generator, this is possible only if you introduce another field, which will be a gauge field, AMU. So AMU will be a function of x, so we need to have another field in order to enforce such a local gauge invariance. And the AMU, in fact, has it's a gauge field. It's, in fact, a connection. Namely, it's a field it's a multiplet. So, in fact, the gauge field has n equal dimension of G component AMU. So those are the component of the field, and it's convenient to regroup them into a single vector where the TAs are the generators of the Lie algebra. That's something I already write here. The generator of the Lie algebra of the group G. So for instance, if you consider that you have the group SU2, the generators are the little a are the polymatrices, 1/2 of sigma a. So there are 2 by 2 complex matrices. So you can represent, yes? So
do you want TA to be in any particular representation of the Lie algebra?
Yes, that's what I'm going to state. The little TA are the generators of the Lie algebra of G. So, this means that in fact they live in the adjoint representation of the group G. I think you got lecture on introductory lecture of group theory. We'll just go back to it. So, in fact, the TAs are the generator of the Lie algebra, which means that this gauge field, viewed as a multiplet, lives in the adjoint representation of the group G. Yes?
Okay. These polymatrices are not the adjoint representation of
SU2. No, I am sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm saying something. Well, you can view them by just making them anti-commute. So in some sense. I go that later. So there are generators of the algebra, and you can define, no, I think there are, because you can define an action of the group on its Lie algebra just by taking the ordinary commutator as of the Lie bracket. And on this action defines the adjoint representation.
Yeah, but the adjoint representation, the matrices are, the dimension of the matrices of the adjoint representation is the same as the dimension of the group. And in SU2, it's a three-dimensional group.
Yes.
And so TA would be 3x3 matrices.
Okay, so perhaps I am a bit imprecise. Okay, so let me say that and not make precise in which representation I am. I'm getting a bit confused. Okay. Yes? Pardon? There are three generators.
Right, there's three generators in SU2.
Yes.
It's a
three-dimensional. Yeah, so the space of matrices, which have the symmetry of the other thing. Okay. Everything will become clear on an example. Okay. And so yes?
Could you please clarify the difference between the little t and the big t now?
Between?
The little t and the big t.
Okay, so in general, the big t is also a generator associated to representation. And the little t will be always the generator of the Lie algebra of the group in my notation. So in general, I will make precise that. So the little t's are the TAs for the fundamental representation of the group. Okay. And so the gauge field will always live in this space. And so now, if I make a gauge transformation, I can make a gauge transformation. So if I change the alpha to be alpha dependent on x, what I have to define is to define what is the covariant derivative d mu of the matter field, the Dirac field, exactly in the same way as the covariant derivative is defined in the QED case for the Maxwell theory or for the. It's simply the ordinary derivative acting of the field psi minus I times A mu A times T A R times psi. So remember, this is a vector some representation. This is a matrix in the representation space, so acting on this matter multiplet. And we multiply it by the A component of the vector field. And this minus this is called the covariant derivative. So, in fact, if I want to be precise, I write that d mu psi I equal d mu psi I minus a mu a t r a matrix element I g of psi g, and I sum over all repeated indices, both the indices of the representation of the matter field and the representation, the indices of the group indices, and here I have the Lorentz indices. Okay, and now. Of course, you see that the covariant derivative depends on A. Okay. And then I know already now, so this is the covariant derivative. I repeat this equation here. This is how I change the, if I make a local gauge transformation, my alpha of x. This is how the matter field transforms, and let us write it once again, psi I transform into psi I plus, this is I, but this is square root of minus 2, alpha A T A R I G psi G. Okay? So now the question is, under such a transformation, if I perform such a transformation, how does A mu transforms? And A mu, in fact, will transform as A mu plus the covariant derivative of alpha itself, which means that here I have an index A, here I have an index A, the covariant derivative acts on A, so in fact this is, in this case, the covariant derivative acts on carries indices because alpha depends on the spin indices. So there is an alpha B So there is an alpha A. So I take this to be the action of the covariant derivative. And then you may ask, how does the alpha, if you make a transformation, well, let's check, I'm a bit confused. On A, and let me, this is not the correct formula. Where is this formula? Yes, and what does it mean? Remember that d mu is in fact is defined as this. So it's first the derivative with respect to some field times A mu times the representation of psi. Remember that alpha belongs to the Lie algebra. So we have to take, in this definition of d mu, we have to take the generators of the representation of the group which act on the Lie algebra itself. And the representation of the group acting on the Lie algebra itself is generated just by the commutator acting on the Lie algebra. So the exact form of the representation law for A is that, and let me write it in a correct way. This is, okay, let me rewrite this as, this is d mu alpha of A with d mu alpha A equals the ordinary derivative d mu alpha A minus A I times the commutator of A mu with alpha, and you take the A derivative of this, where this is the commutator, the ordinary commutator acting on in the Lie algebra of G represented as just an algebra of matrices.
So okay. In U1, this is 0.
Pardon? So for U1, this is 0. for U1, this term is zero because the algebra is complete. But for SU2 or a general group, this is different from zero. Okay?
Excuse me.
And, yes?
Weren't our alphas the numbers from the beginning?
What?
Our alpha.
No, now I take the alpha to be function of x. And so if I take them to be functions of x.
But function, how can it not commute with a mu?
Because it's a matrix. Remember, alpha. Here I am considering
so you haven't defined
a matrix. So if I define formally alpha as alpha A TA, where TAs are the generator of the Lie algebra. So this means that in fact I'm considering in this notation what I mean by A mu alpha, the component A, means that I take the A component of the commutator of this. So in fact, let me define this as A mu alpha A TA. Okay, I sum over indices, so this is a big matrix, which is a linear combination of matrices, Pauli matrices, and this is just the coefficient in front of the coefficient matrices. And if I write that, since I have remembered that A mu is written exactly in the same as A mu A TA, and alpha is written as alpha A, alpha B, TB, you see? All these elements are matrices.
And what would the family be
I show you. Okay, so let me just first start to explain what it means. Then what it means here is that by A mu alpha, I mean what is the commutator of A mu A, which is a number, times TA, which is a matrix, or an element of the Lie algebra, with alpha B TB. This is a number. You see, this is a number. This is a matrix. This is a number. This is a matrix. Therefore, I can sort out the number, and that here I get just the commutator TATB of two generators of the group belonging in the Lie algebra. And then I know that for any D group, TATB, in fact, is proportional of course, it's a matrix, so it can be decomposed into a basis of the generator of the Lie algebra TC, and the coefficients are just some tensor, FABC, which are called the structure constant of the Lie algebra of the group. Okay? And this is standard results of the algebra. So all the structure of the all the information on the structure of the group in contains on the structure constants, which satisfies some Jacobi identities because the commutator must satisfy the Jacobi identities. And this means, in fact, therefore, that what I am writing here is a product of A mu and alpha involving the FABC that I will write before, later. Okay, so once I have done that, I end up with the following mathematical results. Okay? I know how under local gauge transformation, how the Dirac field transforms. I know how the gauge field transforms, and the gauge field transforms with a term involving the covariant derivative of the gauge transformation. So it's a transformation which is starts to mix the A and the alpha through these terms, which is different from what was in the for the U1 or the Maxwell theory. Okay? And then the covariant derivative has the nice property that the covariant derivative transforms in a covariant way if you make a gauge transformation. So you can make a gauge transformation on the covariant derivative of psi. And you find that it transforms in a nice way, while the ordinary derivative transforms in a bad way. So the gauge transformation on d mu alpha, if you want d mu of psi, is transforms in a covariant way if you perform a gauge transformation on d mu of psi. And I will explain that a little bit later. So now, the important thing is now, which is to consider what is the analog of the field strength. So what is the analog of the field strength for the gauge field or the gauge potential? Analog of the F mu nu for the Maxwell field. Okay. So the field strength, let us define it abstractly as the commutator of two covariance derivatives. You know, if the covariance derivative were ordinary derivative, they would commute. If the covariance derivative were just, they are written here, if the covariance derivative were just ordinary partial d mu, they would commute. Since there is a gauge field, they do not necessarily commute. But since here now, the a mu do not commute because they contain TRs, in general, they will be, shall have a result which is different for non-abelian gauge field that what we have for abelian gauge field. So if you do a little bit the calculation and you find that this is the ordinary d mu a nu minus d nu a mu, and then you have minus I times the commutator of the two gauge fields themselves, and this comes from this term, the definition of the covariant derivative, which contains this commutator, which is in general non-zero. It will be zero only if the gauge group is abelian. And remember, then I will probably need a mu is in fact a multiplet depending on the group indices. So there is an A here, there is an A here, and so in fact, F mu nu carries an index for the group. This is the A component. So if I write this in this, this means that in fact, what I do have is that and where is this expression? If you think in terms of derivatives, this will be d mu a nu a minus d nu a mu a minus I. I remember that here I write A mu in terms of the T's, so I have to commute the T's, and the T's contain the E, so I get finally something which would be plus, if I am right, there is an F. Owing to the anti-commuting properties of the FAB, I will have an A mu B, A mu C, and I sum of the B's and the C. So this is the A component of the field strength. So you see the field strength is now a tensor in the Lorentz indices. So it's anti-symmetric. So it's the field strength is an anti-symmetric tensor in the Lorentz indices, exactly like for the U1 case. But in addition, here you have this index, so it depends also. It belongs to the Lie algebra of the group G. So it carries a spin, a group index. Okay. And it carries the same group index that the original gauge potential. So it carries charges. So A mu carries charges, and this F mu nu carries the same charge. Okay?
So the F here is the structure constants, and that's the field strength.
Pardon?
There's two Fs. They look like they're the same, but then this is a structure
constant. Yeah, I'm sorry. Here, this has a, this is a little f, if you prefer. It carries only group indices, and this is a structure constant. So the field strength is not contains a term which is linear in the gauge potential, but in addition, it contains already a term which is quadratic in the gauge potential, which will introduce some coupling of between the gauge field. Okay, and just let me give an example for SU2 example for the group SU2. We have seen that A goes from 1 to 3. The corresponding generators TA are one half of the Pauli matrices. And the structure constant FABC are just in this case the just check that I'm the correct sign. The structure constant are just the epsilon ABC, so completely anti-symmetric. Completely anti-symmetric tensor. And that's because the dimension of the SU2 is 3. Okay, so, and the field, and you see, since the field strength involves only covariant derivative, and covariant derivative transforms covariantly under gauge transformation, this field strength would be a nice object because it will transform covariantly under gauge transformation. And you can check how this object transforms if I'm making a gauge transformation under the AMU. So you make a gauge transformation. We get other x, and you turn, and you see how it works. Okay. So now, what we do have by this mathematical formalism is that we have matter fields, which are fermions, which transforms under local gauge transformation associated to a non-abelian symmetry G, and the action of the non-abelian group G on the fermion is described by a given representation of the group. I have a gauge field, a gauge potential A mu, which belongs to the Lie algebra of the group. So it's a given but well-defined representation of the group. And I know how, when I perform a gauge transformation on the matter field, I have to perform the same gauge, similar gauge transformation on the gauge potential in order to have an action which is invariant. And this, the transformation, also the gauge transformation of the gauge potential are on the same form than for the electrodynamics. A mu is transformed into A mu plus D mu alpha. But in addition, there is this term, A mu alpha, which mixes the generator of the gauge transformation with the gauge potential itself, and which involves the structure constant of the Lie algebra. So it's more complicated because the group is non-abelian. Oops. Okay, and once I've done that, now I can define what is a possible action for this matter plus gauge theory. And I'm looking for an action, Lagrangian, if you want, which will describe an Hamiltonian, which will be invariant. Yes?
So before you write down the action, could you just show what you mean by D mu of phi is covariant? Or why are we calling this covariant?
Okay. Yes. Yes, I should have explained that. I want, in fact, where is it? Where is this? This is written somewhere. Well, basically, I want that when I make a transformation, I want that when I am doing, for instance, a d mu of psi, if I make a gauge transformation, I want that d mu of psi transforms becomes d mu of psi plus the same gauge transformation acting on psi. So I want to it transforms at I alpha times d mu of psi, something like that. Without more complicated terms.
So if I consider the finite gauge transformation, then factor of d just comes out.
Yeah. So it means that if I now I'm doing so this is for infinitesimal gauge transformation, and for a finite gauge transformation, well, remember I transform psi into Rg times psi, I want that d mu of psi transforms also of Rg of d mu of psi. You see. And the potential problem is that since I have d mu and I'm making a gauge transformation, a local gauge transformation, this now depends on x, and if I had only used ordinary derivative, the derivative of something which depends on x times something which depends on x is not the transformation times just the ordinary derivative. So it's for a local gate transformation. So now what is the action I have to take? Then using this, we shall take as an action for the feed. Then I can take just the ordinary Dirac action for psi. This is the Dirac action for the gauge feed. And for the gauge feed, I will take something which will be just 1 over g squared times. I will write it to explain. I can take and I normalize this in this way. I take the same form than for the vector potential for the in the Maxwell theory, except that now you have to remember that F mu nu belongs to the Lie algebra of G. So it's a matrix. It's a 2x2 matrix in the case of the SU2. Yes?
So you said that you take the ordinary Dirac action. That's not the Dirac action, is it?
No, I take the Dirac action with the covariant derivative. So it's the same, similar than for QED. So this is the Dirac, this is D mu. So let us rewrite. Well, I will rewrite it in just.
François?
Yes?
Isn't our derivative with the same covariant and the ordinary derivative. You wrote this formula for transformation of covariant derivative, but it's the same as was for the ordinary derivative. What is the difference?
The difference is that here now I have a transformation which depends on x, because I write g as, remember, g is the exponential of I alpha a of x t a.
Shouldn't d mu psi be invariant under the gauge transformation?
D mu psi? No, it cannot be. It has to be covariant because it belongs to a multiplet of the group. It carries, in fact, d mu psi is a set of d mu psi I. So it's a vector in the multiplet space.
Yeah, but I mean, so under the transformation, we have u psi goes to d mu psi plus I alpha d mu psi.
So here you have a d mu psi I has to be transformed as rg of I g times d mu of psi g. Is it clear? Okay. Let me continue. Okay. So, this is similar than for QED, but you just have to remember that now the psi contains indices. So this is, in fact, these terms will be equal to, if I write it the correct way, this will be psi bar g, I, and then I have the ordinary, so I have the gamma mu, of course. So, of course, now this is a fermion. So this I have a gamma mu times d mu here, where is the covariant derivative, d mu delta ig, but this is delta ig minus I, this is the square root of minus 1, mu of xa, ta r ig, that's it, minus m delta ig, times psi g. Okay, this depends on x, this depends on x, a mu depends on x, and if you want to be really sure, you had the Dirac. So these are the Dirac indices. These are the indices for the representation R of G, the IG, and here are the indices for the group. Yes?
I mean, usually it's standard to have minus a quarter f mu and f mu. Is there a reason?
Minus?
Minus 1 over 4 f mu and f mu. Is there some reason why there is some
I show that. I show that later. Yeah, there is a 1/2. It comes simply for the trace of the sigma matrices. Okay. So now you have here, so I write this in terms of just vectors. This is a compact notation. And here you have to take, you remember, the F belongs to the Lie algebra of the group. So when you take the products of the two, this is an element of the Lie algebra of the group, and you have to define how you make a number out of it. So you have to take the trace. Okay. So so this is a term for the fermion, the analog of the term where you have fermions coupled to the electromagnetic field for QED. And now you have this term, which is trace of minus 1 over half f mu nu. And if I rewrite f mu nu as was done here in terms of the f mu nu a ta, where the TAs are the basis of generator of the group. So those are matrices acting in the Lie adjoint representation. Then you get that this term becomes, where is it? This is, of course, minus 1/2 of f mu nu a times f mu nu a b TA times TB, and you take the trace of this. And if you get this, and you take the correct normalization for SU2, in general, you may have a different coefficient, but at least for SU2, and in fact, in general, it's just a normalization of the trace and the definition of the Koblik constant, you find that this is this minus 1/4 of F mu nu A, F mu nu A, where you sum over the Lorentz indices and over the indices for the group. Okay. So, and here, finally, I have something very important. I have a normalization because I can choose any Koblik constant associated to this term. So I choose here, I call this 1 over g, and I call g the Koblik constant. Okay, and why is it a Koblik constant? So in some sense, it could be a charge affair. Why does it correspond to a charge? It is because, in fact, here I have written everything so that the gauge transformation, in fact, acts in the same way whatever the Koblik constant of the theory is, because I want to have a geometrical description of the gauge transformation. So, as long as I'm doing geometry, I'm doing transformation irrespective of what is the strength of the coupling between the gauge field and the matter field. Okay? And so, Now, of course, in order to see what is the strength of the coupling between the fields of the particle of such a theory, of such a non-abelian theory, in fact, what you like to do is to write the kinetic term. You see, here you have an f mu nu, and f mu nu contains a kinetic term which is analog. So this is a kinetic, if you want, kinetic term analog to QED. And this is a new term which contains the coupling associated to the fact that the theory is non-abelian. Yes?
Do we sum over every indices?
Yes, here I sum over every indices because the action has to be just a number. So I am summing both over the indices for the matter representation, I am summing, of course, over the Dirac indices because I am dealing with fermions. I am summing over the gamma mu d nu, the Lorentz indices, and I am summing over the indices A associated to the gauge multiplet. Yes?
How do we erase and lower the algebra indices?
Pardon?
How do we erase and lower the indices of the gauge field?
How do we
erase and lower the A and B indices?
Here I just the A and B here. Well, here I just assume that I take the standard delta AB form under the Lie algebra. So it's enough, at least for a simple group like SU2. So here, I assume that TA equals TA, if you want. So that's the standard, but you have to be a bit careful. Now, if I want to study what's going on for the mu and the new indices, to raise and the indices, F mu nu would be equal to H mu rho H nu sigma F rho sigma, where H mu nu is minus 1, 1, 1, 1, if I am working in Minkowski space, and 1, 1, 1, if I'm working in Euclidean space. Yes?
So if I were to consider a Lie group, which is non-compact, except as SU1, 1, 1,
yes,
then I would have to distinguish between upstairs and
downstairs. Yes. Yes. No. For more complicated Lie group than an SU2 or SUN in general, etc., then you have to consider that you have different Casimir operators and be a bit more careful. So this works for simple Lie groups. Okay.
A question.
Yes?
I don't want to show it out, but I mean, with this definition, the minus half, I don't see how you get minus a quarter to where you want.
Well, that's what I have written on my notes, but I didn't indicate the calculation. It's simply because with the normalization of the trace of product of Pauli matrices.
But if you want?
Pardon?
In the Abelian case?
In the Abelian case, the normalization is in fact different, yes. But in the Abelian case, the difference in the normalization can be absorbed to 1 over g squared. So I'm taking the standard normalization for non-Abelian gauge field, which indeed, in fact, is not exactly, there is a factor 2 or 4 if you go to QED. But it's not important. It's just a definition of a coupling constant, which is dimensionless. I will see. Okay. So the strength of going back to the strength of the coupling between the fields in the theory, simply you have to redefine a field by saying that A mu is equal to this coupling constant G caret G squared times a mu prime, let us say. And if I make this, it is just a redefinition. Of the field, of the gauge field. And in that case, of course, you see that here comes factor G. Okay. And in the definition of F mu nu, here comes a factor G. And here comes a factor G squared. Okay. So, doing such rescaling, you see that here you have an additional a standard propagator for the fermions, and then a correction which describes a coupling between the fermions and the gauge field. And here, in this term, you have a 1 over g squared times g squared because f mu squared, so you get the ordinary kinetic term for a gauge field as if it was an Abelian gauge field. Okay. And then you get a term of order g coming here and a term of order g squared when you make the coupling. And if I write them, and I will end up shortly. I can rewrite this term 1 over g squared. I will write it this way. I can rewrite this 1 over g squared minus 1 4 of g squared f mu nu a f mu nu a. This becomes, in terms of the new variable, minus 1 4, which becomes, it would become 1 minus 1 4 of f mu nu a f mu nu a in terms of this new variable field a prime, and this will becomes with this new f, and this becomes in fact minus 1/2 of d mu a nu a d mu a nu a plus 1/2 of d mu this must be a d mu a mu a d nu because I have these terms times this term. No, that's okay. So there is two terms, so you get. That's, I get d mu a nu times d nu a mu with just I sum over the indices. So this is the ordinary kinetic term which is already present in quantum electrodynamics. Simply, you have to sum over all the indices for the group indices for the gauge field, but then you get a term which is minus 1/2 times g, because you have a term which is results from the multiplication of these terms by these terms, and these terms you can write it. You get f abc times d mu a nu a times a mu b times a nu c minus d mu d nu a mu a times a mu b times a nu c. Okay, so you have an interaction terms involving three gauge fields, and you can check that it is antisymmetric in the ABC, and it's proportional to the structure constant FABC, and you have a term with a constant G. And then you have finally the terms which comes from the multiplication of these terms by itself in the F mu nu squared terms. So you get a term of order G squared minus 1/4 G squared, and you get the products of two constructor constants, FABC, FADE, A mu B, A mu C, A mu D, A mu E. You see? So you get the ordinary kinetic term. Kinetic term for a gauge potential, the gauge field, exactly like in QED, the Maxwell theory. But now you get, in addition, these terms, which involves three fields, 3A, and this term, which involves 4A. OK? And from this, we can already guess when performing quantization, what will be the Feynman rules? What will be the Feynman rules when doing perturbation theory? At least studying the theory at the level of three order, namely just simple scattering. We have, for the gauge field, we have a propagator for the. First the gauge field. The gauge field now carries both Lorentz index, like the ordinary gauge potential in the Maxwell theory, and it carries a gauge index. It carries some charge. But it is given exactly by, there is this term, which is the term of the Lorentz indices, exactly the same term as for the Maxwell theory. Okay, and you have a sum over A, so which means that you will get delta AB. The charge is conserved by the propagator of the gauge field. So if you have a gauge field carrying a quantum number A, and it propagates in the vacuum, it will end up with the same quantum number A, so there is a delta AB, and then you get the ordinary propagator of the photon. So you see, it's just a photon which carries a charge. Okay. But in addition, you have interaction terms. You have an interaction where you have three gauge bosons. This gauge boson carries Lorentz indices mu, nu, and rho, and they carry charge indices A, B, and C, and they interact in a way which is described by these terms. So there is a factor, and if you count everything, there is a factor G, because this is indeed the strength of the interaction between the gauge bosons, the vector bosons. You have a factor F, A, B, C, which means that it will be, in fact, antisymmetric in the FBC for the SU2 theory, for instance. So it's just the strength is proportional to the coupling constant. And then you have a slightly complicated interaction because you have a d mu here, which means that the interaction will depend on the momenta carried by the photon and by the gauge boson. And if you assume that the momenta here carried by the boson is, let me write it in green, this is k. You have a four momenta here, which is k. Here you have a four momenta, which is p. And here you have a four momenta, which is q, which is carried by the the particles. These are four momenta. So the k's are the four momenta carried by the gauge bosons. The gauge, yes. Then you have a term, and if you write a little bit, there was an I factor in the action. So finally, you get something which should be an h mu nu k minus rho rho plus the other similar term h nu rho p minus q mu plus h rho mu q minus k nu, where h is just the Minkowski matrix. Okay, so this is the vertex. And you see you have an interaction which depends both on the charges and on the momenta. So it means that it carries on spin. It can interchange the spin. So this is, if you want, the spin. This contains the spin structure for the vector bosons. And this carries a charge structure of the interaction. Remember, you have a spin one particle, a spin one particle, a spin one particle. So they have to interchange spin in order to. Okay, and finally, I have these terms, which describe the interaction of four bosons. If I assume that these bosons carry both a charge and a spin, then I get a factor which will be, if I am correct, there will be a factor minus I g squared in the interaction times, and then you have those f a b e f c d e times h mu nu h mu sigma minus h mu sigma h nu rho. So you have a term which is a bit complicated also because it describes the interaction and the interchange of spin between four particles with spin 1/2. And then you have three other terms which are obtained by permutation. And this is A, C, E, F, B, D, E, H, mu, nu, H, rho, sigma, minus H, mu, sigma, H, nu, rho, plus F, A, D, E, F, B, C, E, H, mu, nu, H, rho, sigma, minus H, mu, rho, H, mu, sigma. Okay? So, as this carries the interaction of charges, and this carries the interaction of spins. And one last remark. For SU2, since FABC is equal to the totally antisymmetric tensor, in fact, it means that the gauge boson can carry, if you want, three colors, three indices, one, two, or three. So they can be of three different kinds. You have three gauge bosons. And here you have an FABC, which is an epsilon ABC. So the only three interaction here is where you have one boson of type 1 and one boson of type 2, which becomes one boson of type 3. If you have two bosons of the same kind carrying the same charge, they do not interact. And it's easy to see that FABC, FABE, FCDE is equal to delta AC, delta BD minus delta AD, delta BC. So it's just a difference between two different connector products, which means that, in fact, the kind of interaction you can have is that you necessarily must have bosons of the same kind which interact, you see. You have now bosons with of four different kind, and either this one is the same kind as this one, and this one is of the same kind as this one. They can be of the same, and if they are of the same kind, if A equals C equals B equals D, those two terms cancel. So you see that you can only have an interaction between two bosons of different kinds. Yes?
So the three photon boson vertex, you said that the three bosons have to be different kinds for that to be non-zero.
Yes.
For SE2. But since FABC is antisymmetric for any legal.
Yes.
So that would be true for any legal.
Yes, in fact, that's true. Yes, yes. Simply, it's simple to see in for SU, but that's true in general. And in fact, I think there is a nice, good explanation, which is that if you consider bosons of the same kind, you are describing the U1, some U1 subgroup of the rule theory, and so you are reducing to some what is kind of Maxwell interaction for this subpart of the theory, and there are no interactions. So we have the same. Okay. Okay, and finally, let us finish with the fermion. So the fermion has first a term here. This, if you take the ordinary derivative, it's just an ordinary fermion. So you get a delta. So the fermion, remember, carries a group indices, but now it's a group indices index I, stating which element is the representation. It's not necessarily 1, 2, 3. It can be something different. And it carries a Dirac index. So this is a Dirac index, and this is a group representation index. So in general, the fermion field do not carry the same kind of charge than the charge of the gauge boson, but it's also charges associated to the symmetry group. And you get a delta IG. So here again, the charge are conserved by the propagation of the fermion in the vacuum. And you get this times the ordinary Dirac propagator for the Dirac field in quantum electrodynamics. But, and now you have, in addition to this, you have this this term which contains a psi bar A mu psi term. So you have a vertex of interaction which describes an interaction between a boson between the fermions and one gauge boson. And remember, the gauge boson carries both a group index, so its charge, and a spin index, Lorentz index in this case. And the coefficient associated to that, you can see there will be a factor minus I, an I, factor G. There will be the usual gamma mu alpha beta matrices, which describes how the spin one particle exchanges spins with the fermion, which is the spin one half. It's exactly the same kind of the same term than in QED. And in addition, you have a term which is TARIG, so which contains the element, the matrix element of the generator of the transformation A in the matrix representation R for the spin, for the matter field. So this is the ordinary Dirac spin. This is the spin part. And this is the gauge symmetry part, charge, okay, which in fact is not very different from it's just a generalization of what's going on in QED. Simply here you see that the fermion carries some charge and it can exchange charge with the gauge boson because in general this matrix is non-trivial. For instance, if the gauge if the fermion lives also in the adjoint representation of the gauge group SU2, they will carry the same charge than the gauge field, and they will exchange charge in the same way. Of course, for QED, this term is also here, but simply for QED, the representation is trivial. There is only one matrix, which is the identity matrix, and there are no charge, the charge is zero here. And therefore, the fermions carry charges, but the boson carry no charges, so they cannot interchange charge. But here you have an for SU2 or SUN in general, you can have exchanges of charge between the bosons and the fermions. Okay? And yes? And I end up here. So I've explained how you construct the action, under which symmetry principle it obeys, and what are the typical kind of interaction you will encounter in any gauge theory coupled to fermions. And tomorrow, I will start to discuss quantization of this theory and see what is different and much more interesting in some sense, more difficult but much more interesting when you try to quantize by functional integral, for instance, non-abelian gauge theory, and what's the difference with abelian gauge theory like QED. Thank you.